I found a little story I'd like to share with you. And it says, every time a pope is elected, there are many ancient rituals and ceremonies in accordance with tradition. There is one tradition, however, that people know very little about. Shortly after the new pope is enthroned, the chief rabbi of Rome seeks an audience. He presents the pope with a silver tray bearing a velvet cushion. On top of the cushion is an ancient, shriveled parchment envelope. The pope symbolically stretches out his arm in a gesture of rejection. The chief priest leaves, taking the envelope with him, and does not return until the next pope is elected. Well, Pope Francis was intrigued by this ritual, the origins of which were unknown to him. So he instructed Vatican scholars to research it, but they came up with nothing. When the time came and the chief rabbi arrived for his audience, the new pope faithfully reenacted the ritual rejection. But as the chief rabbi turned to leave, the pope called him back. "My brother," the Holy Father whispered, "I must confess that we are ignorant of the meaning of this ritual repeated for centuries with the representative of the Jewish people. I have to ask you, what is it all about?" The chief rabbi shrugged his shoulders and replied, "We have no more idea than you. The origin of the ceremony is lost in history." So the pope said, "Well, then let us retire to my private chambers and enjoy a glass of wine together. Then, with your agreement, we shall open the envelope and discover the secret at last." The chief rabbi agreed. He was as curious as the pope. And when they were alone, the pope gingerly pried open the parchment envelope with trembling fingers. And the chief rabbi removed a folded sheet of ancient paper. It was written in Aramaic. "What does it say?" the pope asked. The rabbi responded, "It's the bill for the Last Supper." In today's gospel, we have the Lord at the Last Supper with his apostles. If you have your gospels open, take a look at this, because it's a very short gospel, but this occurs at the Last Supper. It says that Judas had just left them. And when Judas had left them, Jesus says, "Now the Son of Man will be glorified." Well, why did Judas leave the Last Supper? He left to betray the Lord. The Lord knew then that everything would be set in motion, that he would be arrested, and of course he would be scourged and mocked and crowned with thorns, and he would be made to carry the cross, and he would die on the cross, but he would rise from the dead. The Lord knew all this. That's why he says, "Now the Son of Man will be glorified. And God the Father will be glorified in him," because the Lord is going to fulfill his purpose. The ancient idea of glory had to do with fulfillment. They would say, like, when the fields were ripe for the harvest, they were in their glory. And so now Jesus was fulfilling his purpose to die on the cross for us. That's why he says that the Son of Man will be glorified. He will go through his passion, death, and resurrection, and he will perfectly fulfill the Heavenly Father's plan. Judas had been one of the 12 apostles, but he was so greedy for the money, and he took the money from the chief priests, and the Lord tried to reconcile with Judas and offered him friendship at the Last Supper. But it said, Satan filled Judas's heart and he went out into the night. As Bishop Sheen says, it is always night when we leave the Lord. Judas left the light of the Last Supper with the candles at the Last Supper. But he also left Jesus, the light of the world. And Judas went out into the darkness to betray the Lord. And so, as there's sometimes you go to Catholic churches and in the very back there's a sign that encourages people to stay until the end of Mass. And the sign says, very simply, only Judas was the only one who left the Last Supper early. And Bishop Sheen says, don't do the Judas shuffle. Okay? Make sure you stay until the end of Mass. Okay? You don't want to be... unless there's sometimes there are necessary reasons why people have to leave Mass early. Legitimate reasons, having to go to work or take care of a child. Of course, that's fine. But remember that Judas was the only one who left the Last Supper early. Now, when we look at what else did the Lord say? Before the Lord would be betrayed, He gives us an important teaching. And these are some of the last words that the Lord would speak to His apostles before His arrest. He says, I give you a new commandment. Love one another as I have loved you. Well, what was so new about that? Because the Old Testament had taught, love one another. We see that in Deuteronomy and Exodus and other books of the Old Testament. So the Old Testament taught, we have to love one another. But what was new about this commandment? It was when Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you. Do you see the difference? As I have loved you. Well, how did Jesus love us? Look up at the cross. And you see, that is how much Jesus loved us, that He was willing to die for us. Jesus loved us totally, unconditionally, sacrificially. And He's saying to His disciples, as His final commandment, love one another as I have loved you. Be willing to die for one another. Be willing to lay down your life for one another. I give you this new commandment. The wedding I did yesterday, the couple chose this reading. And it was so perfect because that's what marriage is all about. The husband and wife are saying that I will be willing to die for you. I'm willing to lay down my life for you. That's what it means to be married. And Jesus says, love one another. Husbands, love your wives as I have loved you. Wives, love your husbands as I have loved you. Totally, unconditionally, sacrificially. That is Christ-like love. And that's what Jesus says that we are called to have for one another. To be willing to love one another as Jesus has loved us. And notice Jesus says it is a commandment, not a suggestion. And a commandment must mean that it's possible for us to do it. It must mean it's something that we can make a decision about. Because if love were just a feeling or an emotion, God could not command us to have a feeling. See, God cannot command you to be hungry or thirsty. He cannot command you to like broccoli or to like cauliflower. Okay? But He can command us to love if love is a decision. If love is an act of the will, then God could command us to have an act of the will. He cannot command us to have a feeling or an emotion. So He says, I give you a new commandment. And so love is a decision. Love is an act of the will. It's much more than feelings and emotions. If you want to read a great book by a wonderful Christian author, Gary Smalley wrote a book called Love is a Decision. It's about husbands and wives. It's much more than emotions. Love is a decision. So Jesus says, love one another. And the word that He uses for love, there are four main words in Greek for love. You have eros, which is romantic love. You have storge, which is patriotic love. You have philios, which is brotherly love. But Jesus doesn't use any of those. He uses agape. Agape, which is sacrificial love. It is self-donating love. It is total, unconditional love. So Jesus says, I give you a new commandment. love one another as I have loved you, totally, sacrificially, unconditionally. Now the good news is Jesus doesn't say you have to like one another. Okay? He nowhere says you have to like your boss or you have to like your co-workers or like your neighbors. You don't. But you do have to love them. Do you see the difference? See, like is like a feeling, but love is a decision. So you have to love your boss, love your neighbors, love your spouse, love your children. And what is love? St. John Vianney says, love is a threefold thing. First, love is desiring the highest and best good for the other person. What is the highest and greatest good? It's heaven. So if you love somebody, you want them to go to heaven. You don't want them to lose their soul. You want them to be converted and go to heaven, to be with God for all eternity. Then St. John Vianney says, to love another person means to do whatever good we can for them, when we can, for other people. So it's trying to help others when they're in need. As Mother Teresa says, love and give until it hurts. And then John Vianney says, the third aspect of loving another person is to bear, excuse, and hide the faults of others. Not to speak about others' faults, but to excuse and to hide the faults of others. So those are the threefold dimension of love by the great St. John Vianney, patron saint of parish priests. And then lastly, Jesus gives one last sentence. He says, after he told them that he gave them a new commandment, and this commandment was to love one another as he has loved us, he says, and this is how you will know, that others will know, that you are a Christian. And notice what Jesus doesn't say. They'll know you're a Christian by your theological knowledge. Jesus doesn't say that. They'll know you're a Christian by your wisdom or by your brilliance or by your faith. Jesus says no. They'll know you're a Christian by your love. That is the hallmark of a true Christian, is their love of God and their love of neighbor. So when we think about this and we try to really reflect upon what does that mean when Jesus says to love one another as I have loved you, it even means to be willing to die for another person. And we have a great example, St. Maximilian Kolbe, that Catholic priest who was arrested in 1945 and taken to Auschwitz, the Nazi concentration camp. And in the camp, after he was there for a period of time, perhaps a year or so, 10 men were about to be executed. One of the men began to weep and cry and say, what will happen to my wife? What will happen to my children? Father Kolbe, St. Maximilian Kolbe, stepped forward and he says to the sergeant, to the Nazi guard, I am willing to die for that man. And the sergeant, of course, was shocked, but he let him do it. And this young man was released, and Father Kolbe went into the starvation bunker with the other 9 men. And after 2 weeks, they injected him with acid, with poison, and he died. He did not even know who this man was, but he was willing to lay down his life for him. See, that is true love. That is Christ-like love, that St. Maximilian Kolbe was willing to lay down his life. Just as Jesus laid down his life for you and me, he was willing to lay down his life for a man in this prison that he did not even know. But that was true love. And actually, in my last parish, we had such a powerful story. One of the fathers, one of the dads, gave his life to save his son. You might have read about the story a couple years ago, Mr. Tom Vanderwoody. He has 7 sons. His youngest son, Joseph, has Down syndrome. Joseph is in his mid-20s right now. And on the Blessed Mother's birthday, September 8th of a few years ago, Mr. Vanderwoody was working out in the field on the farm. Joseph was out there as well. Joseph had been exploring, and apparently he removed the lid or a cover to an old well, an old cistern that had been on the farm's property, and he fell in. And it was very deep. The water, the sewage that was in there was very deep. And of course, Mr. Vanderwoody ran over and tried to pull him out. There was no way to pull him out. So he jumped in as well and got underneath Joseph and held him up until the emergency squad came and were able to save his son. But Mr. Vanderwoody died holding his son and saved his life. So as the Lord says, there is no greater love than to lay down your life for another person.